Today on Annenberg Radio News.
It's about creating jobs in Los Angeles. It's about addressing pension reform, and it is about looking at inefficiencies.
We take a look at City Controller Wendy Gruhl for the final installment of our series of mayoral candidate profiles. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, February 28th, 2013. I'm Omar Shamoot. The countdown to the sequestration cuts ends at 11:59 tomorrow night. The across-the-board budget cuts have both Republicans and Democrats pointing fingers at each other. Today, Republicans blocked a vote on a Democratic plan for the budget deficit, while the politicians argue the country is busy preparing. Reporter Katie Lyons talked with shoppers at the Baldwin Hills Crenshaw Plaza about their concerns.
The highly anticipated and much dreaded sequestration has finally arrived. Unless Congress reaches a last-minute deal, starting tomorrow, $85 billion will be cut from the federal budget until September 30th. It would put as many as 750,000 federal jobs at risk. South LA residents are most worried about how cuts will impact their lives. Barry Brewer is worried about crime.
Crime rate will go up. I think it's just more frustrated people in the world, you know. It's just a lot of different aspects. Like I said, crime, I just think that definitely, especially in our community, in the urban community, you know, it's a lot of different things. Bills not paid, kids not able to go to school, maybe with the proper, you know, necessities that they need.
President Obama says the cuts will put teachers' jobs at risk, leave the country unprepared for future military engagements, and create day-to-day inconveniences, such as long lines at the airport and shuttering of public parks. I talked to a dozen people outside of Walmart who knew nothing about sequestration. Randy Shrewsbury is concerned with the amount of people that are unaware of the cuts.
Oh, I think it's going to hurt us heavily. And I think that one of the big issues is that most people aren't informed, unfortunately. In fact, I heard a poll recently that only about 25% of people are really paying attention to it.
Sequestration will add additional pressure to schools who have already had to lay off staff. Brian Fields wishes that schools had more staff for sanitary reasons.
That, like, if one of the schools, even over here at King, they don't have, they had to lay off the janitors, actually. So if you was to go up there and see how nasty them bathrooms is, you'd really be like, man, you know, it looked like you could find a little bit of money to hire a janitor or two.
Obama has been working with Republicans to create an alternative to sequestration. Katie Lyons, Annenberg Radio News.
61% of California voters now approve of same-sex marriage, according to a new poll by the Field Research Corporation. This number is 2% higher than last year's result and is the largest margin of support for gay marriage ever recorded by the poll in California. The Obama administration filed a legal brief with the Supreme Court asking it to overturn California's ban on same-sex marriage. And the controversial national debate about gay marriage is taking a shift with major corporations. Over 200 companies signed a brief yesterday against the Defense of Marriage Act. Notable companies who have signed on include Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and Starbucks. Analysts believe companies may be signing on to the anti-DOMA brief out of concern over the work environment.
There is a, if the DOMA Act falls, there is a portion of there that could affect businesses and employers. And so we want to make sure that everything falls into line and that we're, you know, that all rights are restored to all people.
That was Laura Lara of the Long Beach Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. She says most of the companies that have signed on to the brief have long been supporters of equal rights. The Los Angeles Unified School District is one of 8 districts in California asking for a joint waiver from the No Child Left Behind standards. The superintendents of the districts say they want to measure performance in a way that's not overly dependent on test scores. Last year, the federal government rejected the state of California's request to be exempted from the strict standards. Pope Benedict XVI officially left the Vatican this morning. He's the first pope in over 600 years to leave his post. Onlookers in St. Peter's Square cheered and waved flags as church bells sent the emeritus pope off to his summer residence outside Rome. Victims of abuse within the Catholic Church are hoping that whoever assumes the papacy will take a stronger stance against the proliferation of sexual crimes. Rita Miller, who says she was abused by 7 priests and impregnated by one of them, held a news conference today to urge the new pope to be more responsible.
The new pope needs to remove the stigma of abuse from the victims and place it on the perpetrators. He needs to speak to the worldwide church and place the blame where it belongs.
Miller says she wishes Cardinal Roger Mahoney would recuse himself from the conclave. Mahoney is accused of trying to cover up sexual abuse by priests in the Los Angeles diocese. L.A.'s Echo Park neighborhood is soon to get its namesake back. The 29-acre park just northwest of Dodger Stadium has been closed for 2 years, but it's coming back, new and improved. Aaron Trank has an update.
Construction crews are putting the finishing touches on Echo Park Lake, digging irrigation lines where new plants will soon grow. Echo Park Lake and the green space around it have been a draw to the densely populated Echo Park neighborhood for more than a century. But for the past 2 years, it's been more of a fenced-off eyesore as the city revamps the lake. The lake is really a detention basin for the city's storm drain system, collecting runoff from the streets. Why did it need fixing? Here's Kendrick Akuda, a civil engineer on the project.
The lake itself previously was considered an impaired water body because it had a lot of contamination pollution.
That's trash and toxic materials brought from the streets. To meet water quality standards, the city spent the past couple of years draining, dredging, and relining the lake, and adding a filtration system to keep out pollutants. Instead of picnics and paddle boats, Echo Park residents have had construction sounds and strange smells. Adam Ridley lives across the street from the park.
It's just been unfortunate not to have a place to go and sit and read a book or jog around the lake, you know. And the construction could be a little noisy.
He's cooling down from a run around the park, or its construction fences anyway.
A gross tarp fence in front of your face, kind of, it's not very fun.
Jose Segala is the former president of the Greater Echo Park Neighborhood Council. He says all the inconvenience will soon be worth it.
When I talk to my fellow neighbors, I tell them, yes, this is going to be an inconvenience for about a year and a half, but look at it this way. The rehabilitation of the lake should last another 100 years.
The $65 million rehabilitation project is funded by Proposition O, which supports stormwater construction projects around the city. But the project boasts some aesthetic improvements as well. The park's famous lotus beds, which inspire an annual lotus festival, died a few years back. They were replanted this week, expected to bloom next spring. And the park's famous Art Deco Lady of the Lake statue, once vandalized and moved to a different part of the park, is back in its prominent position. There'll also be a new playground, walking trails, a boathouse cafe, and fishing. Gabriel Sandoval lives in a home overlooking the park.
I'm extremely excited. I can't wait. It's been years in the making. I look forward to the opening of this park and ensuring that it becomes a city center, like many other city centers in the great city of LA.
The next step is welcoming wildlife back to the park. Here's Julie Allen, the engineering board project manager.
Well, we have coyotes that come that live in the neighborhood, but all the waterfowl that were here before, we expect to come back once the site is complete. They didn't even wait till it was complete. They started coming back.
Unlike ducks and geese, the people of Echo Park will have to wait until the end of spring when the park opens. Aaron Schrank, Annenberg Radio News.
Time for a look at the weather. Evening temperatures will dip into the upper 50s tonight, but the warming trend will continue this weekend. Both Friday and Saturday will see clear skies and temperatures peaking in the low 80s. Evenings will cool down into the 50s once again, and a few more clouds are expected on Sunday. But overall, looks like a gorgeous weekend is in the cards. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we take a look at how the Dodgers are gearing up during spring training. Our final mayoral profile covers the candidate with the biggest remaining war chest, City Controller Wendy Gruhl. After spending most of her career in LA politics, she has united business owners and labor leaders in her quest to become the city's first female mayor. Rosalie Murphy has more.
The mayor's office would bring Wendy Gruhl's long political career full circle, because it's exactly where she started. The 51-year-old candidate started volunteering for former mayor Tom Bradley when she was still in high school. Gruhl is a lifelong Angeleno. Born in North Hollywood, she graduated from Kennedy High School in Granada Hills and then from UCLA. She worked in Bradley's office for more than 10 years and was elected to city council in 2002. Her long-term dedication to the city impresses Kaya Masler, who took a break from phone banking at Gruhl's office on Crenshaw and 54th to talk.
She also talks about her work and how much she loved it. She really loves being in politics, especially local politics, and she loves LA, so that was inspiring to me.
As city controller, Gruhl discovered in 2010 that city agencies left more than $260 million in debts uncollected, mostly in parking tickets. She also published the salaries of city employees after embezzlement in Bell, California made headlines in 2011.
She's incredibly genuine, and she is a watchdog. I mean, she's a fiscal watchdog.
Gruhl's priority is economic growth.
Well, what I have said, a couple of things. One, it's about creating jobs in Los Angeles. It's about addressing pension reform, and it is about looking at inefficiencies, ways in which we can address waste, fraud, and abuse in the city of Los Angeles.
Specifically, Gruhl has promised to dedicate 20% of new revenues to the fire and police departments. She wants to hire 2,000 new police officers and 800 new firefighters, which the Daily News says would cost about $200 million.
We should have a goal of being the safest big city in America. If we increase the revenue that is so important to the city of Los Angeles, that a portion of that should be dedicated to hire more police officers and firefighters, as well as ensuring we have emergency preparedness and gang reduction programs.
But this year's FBI report shows that property and violent crimes have fallen steadily for a decade now. Former Daily News editor Ron Kay says growing the police force doesn't need to be the city's first priority.
Crime isn't the number one problem. Cops aren't the number one issue in the city. The health of our neighborhoods, the quality of our lives, and our loss of faith in a city working for us is the crisis.
To generate money, Gruhl plans to rely on the new city controller to reduce the city's budget. In addition to reforming city pensions, she supports the elimination of the gross receipts tax for businesses. Economists say eliminating the tax will probably drive investment, but it may take a decade to recoup the lost revenues. Eric Garcetti, Kevin James, and Emmanuel Pleitez support removing the tax, too. Jan Perry wants to keep it in place. Gruhl also opposes the half-cent sales tax increase on next week's ballot, but Kay wants more details.
Sales tax increase in a very quiet voice. They talk in symbolic language without actually specifying concrete policies that could be critiqued, examined, challenged, questioned.
If elected, Gruhl would be the city's first woman mayor. And after Tuesday's vote, the city council might become all male. Masler says gender isn't the reason she supports Gruhl, but she would like to see a woman in the top office.
I'm not really one for, like, tokenism, but I think that she, being the type of woman that she is so hyper-qualified.
Gruhl leads the candidates in funds raised, and she's neck and neck with Garcetti in most polls. She's backed by most of the city's public workers' unions, who in total have donated more than $2 million to her campaign. Detractors worry that such huge fiscal support will oblige Gruhl to unions.
When I've challenged it of why they jumped aboard, and the answer generally is Wendy's the easiest one for them to manipulate, is she has never really stood boldly for anything, and she is incredibly likable. Everybody likes Wendy. She's smart and personable, but she's danced around the hardest issues.
After more than three decades in LA's public eye, Gruhl is definitely popular. And if polls are accurate, she'll have two more months to address the hardest issues. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
Visit annenbergradio.org for close-ups of the other leading mayoral candidates. And don't forget to vote on Tuesday, March 5th. This is National Eating Disorder Awareness Week. This year's theme is Everybody Knows Somebody. That is somebody with a disorder such as anorexia, bulimia, binge eating, and other problems. I spoke earlier today with Dr. Patricia Pitts, a national expert in the treatment of eating disorders. Seeing as it is National Eating Disorder Awareness Week, can you give us an idea of how prevalent eating disorders are in today's society?
Statistics will range anywhere between 4.5 to 18%. As high as 25% of college-age women engage in binging and purging as like a weight management technique. So there's different, stats that I've seen over the course of years, but probably for college-age students, it would be close to to 15 to 20% engage in some kind of eating disorder behavior.
Can you describe a little bit binge eating? We may have an idea in our minds of what that means, but it might help listeners to understand what it's like from a medical point of view.
Probably a key element of binge eating is that people take in a large quantity of foods over a short period of time. So they're taking in upwards of, say, 5,000, 10,000 calories, and it's an out-of-control behavior, and they can't seem to stop. And part of the criteria is also discomfort in one's body as far as body image issues, and also a lot of guilt and shame for having eaten a lot of food and then holding it on. The differential diagnosis with, say, bulimia would be the binging behavior, but they do compensatory behavior such as vomiting, excessive exercise, laxative abuse. So they're looking at doing something to compensate for bringing the food in.
Can you describe exercise bulimia?
People are binging out of control, so they're looking for a way to compensate for the binging behavior. So by exercising and exercising excessively, which can be easily, say, 6 days a week, probably 2 hours a day, to try to burn the calories that the person has been binging on. So it's their way of compensating.
A lot of people lead busy lives, you know, and you often hear people say, oh, I just forgot to eat this morning, or I forgot to eat lunch. Where does something like that fall into this?
You know, if a person forgets to eat once or twice, that's one thing. But when people start having any kind of patterns that start restricting food intake, like dropping food groups, skipping meals, eating a lot of low-calorie foods, those are precursors to an eating disorder.
How do eating disorders affect mood and personality?
One is that the eating behavior is just a symptom. So if people are depressed, anxious, bipolar, highs and lows, they may use food as a way to control, manage their emotions. Go to food or go away from food. Often going away from food calms anxiety. People are depressed, can go either way. So what people often are doing is they already have the underlying emotional dynamic going on, and the food becomes a symptom to manage it. Eating disorders themselves have the highest mortality rate of all mental illnesses, and so it's really a critical issue. And if people are struggling and people try to say, well, just stop eating or just eat, that's not enough. You know, I statements, I'm feeling upset when I notice that you're doing X, Y, and Z. That helps an individual start, you know, seeing that maybe I do need some support and some help.
That was Dr. Patricia Pitts of the Bella Vita Counseling Center. Well, it's time for some Dodger baseball. With spring training underway, reporter Evan Budrovich spoke with two MLB beat writers to preview all things Dodger Blue.
Dodgers fans are looking to cash in this spring on a luxurious free agent spending spree. Dylan Hernandez, the Dodgers beat writer for the LA Times, notices the team's sense of focus.
One thing that all the team executives were very pleased about was the fact that, no one came in overweight, it seemed. This probably is the fittest team I've seen from the start of camp.
The team's greatest strength lies in its pitching staff, something Hernandez believes is elite.
I expect them to have one of the best rotations in baseball. And even if, you know, the lineup doesn't produce as expected, it's a good enough of a rotation that they're going to be competitive.
Well, the Dodgers certainly have quantity. They have two excellent pitchers in Kershaw and Greinke at the top of the rotation. Quality we'll have to see.
Sports writer Bill Shaken doesn't buy into all the hype. Head coach Don Mattingly returns for his third season at the helm, a year in which Shaken says losing is just not an option.
Ultimately, this team is going to be judged on whether they win or not. There's too much money to judge it otherwise, and if they don't win, I think he understands that he could be at risk.
The new hitting coach, Mark McGwire, brings 583 home runs of experience to the offense. McGwire and Sammy Sosa battled for the king of swing in the late 90s, Hernandez believes McGwire continues to break the mold.
You know, again, we're in this age where everybody's breaking down their swing and so worried about every little thing in their swing. And I think McGwire's thinking is, you know what, if you're at this level, your swing is fine. You know, focus more on the strategy.
The Dodgers' $230 million payroll is the highest in baseball, an investment that benefits everyone.
The Guggenheim people definitely have the money to do whatever the fans want them to do.
Opening day is only 32 days away, making spring training a crucial time to build the foundation for a deep postseason run. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
Artwork from the Herb and Dorothy Vogel collection can now be seen at the Museum of Contemporary Art in downtown Los Angeles. 50 galleries throughout the country were given 50 pieces of the Vogels' massive collection. Denise Guerra reports on a story about one couple and their love affair with art collecting.
He was a postal worker who worked the night shift, and she was a city librarian. To the average person, this unassuming, quiet couple could never be America's most iconic art collectors. But since the 1960s, Herb and Dorothy Vogel collected more than 4,000 pieces from the New York contemporary art scene, squeezing pieces into every spare corner of their tiny one-bedroom apartment. Their appetite for art has been described as voracious, but their criteria for purchasing art was simple. They had to like it, it was affordable, and it could fit into their tiny apartment. Many of the pieces at MoCA are about process rather than result. Torn sheets of notebook paper scribbled with notes of how colors should appear washed out, or sketches on draft paper. There are highly stylized pieces, such as Linda Bengliss' 1978 sculpture, Little Pinch, which looks like a giant candy wrapper dipped in gold and sparkles. Next to the sculpture hangs a drawing of the Vogels, watching proudly over their collection. The couple went to local art shows and were often the first buyers for up-and-coming contemporary and minimalist artists. And when the couple bought one artwork, they kept coming back as customers and as friends. The Herb and Dorothy Vogel collection will be on display at MoCA in downtown LA until March 11th. But before visiting the gallery, I suggest watching the documentary film, Herb and Dorothy. You will see some of the LA pieces in context and fall in love with a couple who loved collecting art because it just made them happy. Denise Guerra, Annenberg Radio News.
City Attorney Carmen Trutanich announced he's filing an injunction against a violent street gang in the San Fernando Valley, as Nicolette Collegian has our Nicolette Collegian has details on the effort to create a safe zone.
City Attorney Carmen Trutanich was a hardcore gang prosecutor back in the 80s. He is no stranger to the pain gangs inflict on a community.
I've seen the havoc that they can rain upon victims. I've held the hands of mothers who've lost sons from the deadly burst of bullets and senseless gun violence.
When an injunction is in place, gang members can't associate with each other or break laws in the designated safe zone. Trutanich points to a blown-up map identifying 2.7 square miles of the northeast San Fernando Valley where this injunction for the Columbus Street Gang will be in effect.
And when two people get together, you know they're not talking about, you know, batting averages and pitching ERAs. They're talking about capering and gangbanging.
Police believe the gang is responsible for murder, assault, robberies, and drug sales in Panorama and North Hills. Captain Todd Chamberlain of LAPD's Mission Station says this injunction is an important tool for combating gang crime.
This is something that's mandated by the community, by the people who live there, by the people who have to be subjected to this ongoing harassment, this ongoing intimidation, this ongoing fear of the gang and the gang activity that's related to it.
Trutanich says that gang violence has no place in a civilized society.
When you have a kid who can't go out and play in the front yard because a bullet from down the street might hit him, you know, that's not the neighborhood you want to be in.
Opponents of gang injunctions say they can violate civil liberties and disrupt the peace process among warring groups. Writer Celeste Freeman says it could even affect family gatherings.
You can have two brothers named, and literally they can't associate with one another, and if they associate in public, they can be arrested.
A violation of this injunction would result in up to 6 months in custody. Nicolette Collegian, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Paige Graham to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks. Well, tonight we'll have a profile on mayoral candidate Eric Garcetti. We'll also have more coverage in the next coming week as the mayoral election is next Tuesday. And our weather anchor Eric Rubel spent a day at a new bakery called Porto's. He got a behind-the-scenes view of how their treats are made. And finally, anchor Joy Wang traveled to Skid Row to talk to residents and organizers about the future for the L.A. homeless population.
Thanks, Paige. Make sure and check out AnnenbergRadio.org for a story on how musicians are cultivating the next generation of jazz enthusiasts. That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from ATVN, Olivia Nyland, Amen Oyiboke Osifo, and Sam Weiser. Molly Gray is our producer. Our executive producer is Aaron Trank. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Omar Shamoot.